This is Denise with Recovery Radio, and in the studio today I have RJ, and we're going to get to talk, and she works at the Latal Recovery Center here in Moscow. RJ, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me here again.
Yeah, we're glad to have you.
I'm glad to be here. I'm always glad to be here.
Awesome.
You had said that you kind of wanted to start with who I was.
Yes, just tell us, the audience, a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name's RJ. And I have 29 years clean from drugs, and I have 30 from alcohol. And my life was pretty thrown about a lot, had a lot of issues, didn't really have like parents and stuff, so I ended up switching a lot of places sometimes. And I had my brother, who I kind of lost touch with, but then lately found. I got into the alcohol scene fairly early, got into the drug scene really early. And when I had my oldest daughter at 21, when I was pregnant with her, is when I quit drinking, but only because I had heard the horrifying stories, you know, of when you're pregnant, if you drink. And then when she was born and I was holding her, it was more of the like of, I had always wanted someone to like love me unconditionally. And when I saw her, it was like this light bulb went off in my head. I guess you could say my higher power went off in my head and goes, you know, like, this is the only thing that's going to love you unconditionally, at least for now, you know. Maybe you better do what you can not to lose her. And the only thing I knew was if I did the drugs, I'd lose her. So I went through several years of the NAAA thing. And it kind of worked and kind of didn't for me. I was one of those, I guess, I just kind of wasn't my thing right then. But I managed to stay clean. But I stayed clean because, you know, by then, you know, of course I had my daughter, and I was, every time, you know, I wanted to do something, I would just hold her, and just, that was enough to keep me, you know, from wanting to do anything. And life was struggles, you know, like, so I spent 5 or 6 years in NAA not really doing anything.
And let me ask, how old were you when you had your daughter?
21.
Okay.
And then I got into meeting people, NAA and NA, and I met a sponsor. And so, and it was kind of weird because he was a guy sponsor, and it's like, you know, you need to work the steps. No. So I did, and it did help a lot. It helped a lot with my addiction issues, because I had the drugs, I had the drinking, and I had the opiate problem, and I had all of those things. And so it did help with all of those things. But I had this strange idea that when I got through all that, you know, that I was good and I was healthy and I was there and I could do this. And yeah, that didn't work that way, because the things that started me using in the first place were mental health issues, and they were still there.
And so how did you start identifying that that was something that was an issue for you?
Well, I started identifying it a lot later on, you know, like, I don't know, I'd say about 12 years ago, really. And I started identifying it because I still wasn't using, and I was still doing the AANA thing, you know, getting the support and everything. But I still wasn't functioning for what I thought a normal person was supposed to function. Back mm-hmm. then, I thought there was a normal. And so I kept, well, there's something wrong, you know, there's something wrong. And I knew, I'd remember back when I was a kid, a doctor had told one of my foster parents not to put much hope in me, because I not only had ADHD, but I was also dyslexic. And I wasn't going to really make it anywhere, you know. And so I thought, well, you know, maybe that's part of my problem, you know, is I have those things. Well, I don't know anything to do about them, so, you know, I might as well just give up. And I pretty much did.
So do you feel like when you were told that as you were younger, did that affect you in a negative way?
Oh, I think it affected me way in a negative way. Because okay. I think really when I go back and look at it now, having as much even mental health time that I do in mental health recovery, that one statement, just even though I was only 8, and, you know, you'd think being 8, you wouldn't be able to put like 2 and 2 together and make it have an effect. You can't, because that one statement right there, the thing that went through my brain is, well, I might as well give up. Why even bother trying?
So, yeah, the things that we hear when we're a child, sometimes we don't have a clear understanding of what that means, and we turn it into something more than what it was meant to be.
And then, you know, I struggled really hard. I mean, I ended up with people who were abusive and would beat the crap out of me, and I couldn't figure out why, you know. And I finally, with my youngest daughter, decided that the last person knew it was time to leave, because it wasn't just me. And so we left, and we ended up sleeping a night under a bridge in an ice storm. We were on the run for a couple of years. And so during that time, I didn't get a whole lot of time to do AA and NA because I was trying to survive. The only thing I had known all my life was, I got to survive. So I never did that growing up period, you know, where you go, okay, well, you know, this is how you put on the makeup is what the mom would do, you know, and the dad would be, well, you know, these are the kind of people and things like that. And I never got that when I was younger. And, you know, because I spent most of my time just surviving. And shortly after, probably about 11 years ago, I had met these incredible people. And I'd actually met them, of all places, online. It was the original place I'd met them. And they kind of, I told them a little bit about my story, and they told me a little bit about them. And we ended up making this huge connection. And so they sort of, even though I was adult age, I was not mentally or emotionally there. So they sort of adopted me.
They're kind of like
parents. Yeah, they were my parents. Mm-hmm. And it really worked out very well, because they were the ones who were like, okay, you know, this is your next step, and this is your next step, and this is, you know, and every step I took, they would encourage me, you know. And then it was shortly after that a few years, I met Andrew, who was very encouraging. I mean, helped me get into my own place, helped me figure out how I was supposed to pay rent. Matter of fact, there's a laughing joke about that if you want to hear it.
Go ahead.
The first time I went to pay rent, he kept going, did you go pay rent? And I'm like, no, I haven't done that yet. And he's like, okay, you got to go do that. This is how much it is. You need to go do that. So I decided while he was at work one day that I was going to go pay the rent. And so I took the money down there, and I'm sitting in the office waiting for the lady, right? And she calls me in there, and I go in there and I hand her all the money. And she goes, I can't take that. And I went, oh, okay. You know, that was like panic city, you know. And so, because I'd never lived in my own apartment. I didn't even know what I was doing. And so I go back upstairs, and I'm like, oh, my God, I couldn't pay rent. Oh, you know, what do I do? Well, Andrew showed up a couple of days later, and he's like, well, did you pay rent? No, the lady wouldn't take it. So does that mean I get to live here for free? He said, no, how did you give it to her? I said, I handed her all the money. He said, money order? I said, no.
So let me backtrack with a question. So you had said earlier that when you were growing up, that there wasn't like the guidance, the parental guidance. And so do you feel that was a part of what was happening in your adulthood, was that some of that guidance and showing you how to do things maybe wasn't?
I think that had a big part of my adulthood, because I didn't know the next steps, you know, and I didn't know, you know, all these things. And I there was just so many different little bitty things that I didn't know about having your own place. You know, like, you know, you were supposed to make sure that, you know, if something broke, you let the landlord know. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I never lived in an apartment before then. I didn't know that. And any place I'd ever been before that, it wasn't my place. It was someone else's. So they just dealt with it. And I'm just like, okay, that works for me.
So we're going to take a break soon, but it just kind of sparked an idea in my head about RJ works at the Latol Recovery Center here in Moscow, downtown off of Main Street. And one of their classes that they offer is life skills, which, you know, if you need help in that area, I've also heard it be talked about that one of the things they did last year was help you with your taxes.
Yes.
And so just something to keep in mind for our listeners. And we will be back in a few minutes after the break. Thank you so much, RJ.
Thank you.
This is Denise with Recovery Radio. Thank you. By The Who, and this is Denise with Recovery Radio, and you're listening to KRFP Moscow Pullman. And I'm here in the studio with RJ from the Recovery Center, and we were just talking about life as she was growing up and early adulthood and what was going on in her recovery and before that. And RJ, so can you tell us about your job at the Recovery Center?
Well, at the Recovery Center, I'm the Recovery Peer Coordinator, and mostly a lot of what I do is we have what we call recovery peer volunteers, which are people who, like me, have had the mental health background and have had, you know, our substance abuse background or both or whatever. And we've had, I'm certified peer support. They've had some training, and we work with people who want to have recovery from mental health or substance abuse or both. So mostly what I do is I help them. I still talk to, like, I still have a few peers is what we call them, who I work with because I have the same background that they do. And it's important to have that background. You know, it's important to have kind of come from where they come from because, I feel like it makes them feel more comfortable. And two, you know, they can feel like they can come talk to you and you're not going to judge them. So that takes one pressure off of them. You know, they learn very quickly that it's a very confidential one-on-one conversation and it doesn't go anywhere else. So they don't feel like they have to worry about what they tell you. They actually can focus on their recovery. And then we have tools that we help them with. And we usually see them once or twice a week. And we have tools that we help them with, such as a recovery wellness plan, helps them with their goals. We have a crisis plan, kind of, you know, because when, just like I know, when you have mental health problems or you have, you know, addiction problems, you have those crisis times. And it's really helpful to have a plan. Okay, well, I can look at my paper. Well, you know, oh, I can call this person, you know, and talk to them. It helps.
So what did you mean by certified?
Certified. I'm a certified peer specialist recovery coach, meaning I have been through 40 hours worth of training for peer support specialist. And along with their ethics training, and I have the mental health background. I've lived the mental health background to help people in that particular area. So I'm a certified peer specialist.
State certified.
That's actually state certified. Mm-hmm. That's actually where I started. It went from there to getting my recovery coaching, which is for dealing with substance abuse and things like that. And also some mental health. They kind of almost go together in a lot of ways. And that's for working with people who, you know, have had substance use addiction problems and things like that. And that one is another 40-hour class with another, I think it's 16 or 20 hours in their ethics. Mm-hmm. So I've had that, and I've had two of those. I've done one through CCAR, which is the original, and one through Recovery Idaho. And so that's what we're talking about when we're talking about being certified. I've been through all the training.
So you've had a handful.
I've had a handful
experience, yeah.
Yes, and then I have all my background experience, which helps tremendously. Life experience.
Yeah. So what's a typical day look like for you?
A typical day for me. Well, a typical day for me is I work anywhere from 5 hours to, I think, 8 hours. I think my longest day actually is 8 hours, 12 to 8 on Tuesdays. And so a typical day for me is going to work and working on paperwork and talking to anybody that comes in. We have people that come in and they're in crisis, you know. They're, you know, they don't know what they're going to do. And that's actually one of my favorite part of my jobs, because I know how that is, because I've been there, you know. And I really enjoy just sitting there talking to them and helping them figure out, okay, well, what is our next step? Because the one thing I try to let them know is there's hope, and you have a partner. You've walked through these doors. There's people here who will help you, who will make you as comfortable as they can, and who will walk that journey with you so that you don't feel alone, so that you have that hope. And that's one of my favorite part of my job, is because I get to reach people and give them that hope and show them that, okay, yeah, I know that's what's going on, but let's see what we can do.
So it sounds like this is a passion of yours, to be able to help people.
This is my life. I mean, I've always been that way since I was a kid, wanted to help people.
Does this help you in your recovery?
This helps me, excuse me, in my recovery tremendously. I stay very focused on my recovery. And I had my period where I had both my mental health recovery and my substance abuse recovery, and then there was nothing. At least I thought there was nothing. Mm-hmm. And then before I stayed in that too long, my counselor introduced me to Daryl from the Lake Tahoe Recovery Center, and because that's where I had to go to find out about where the peer support school was going to be and things like that. And then he's like, well, you want to volunteer? And I'm like, okay, one day a week, 2 hours a day. And that stayed that way for all about 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then I went to peer support school and came back, and I still volunteered. I was there. I loved every minute. I was there 40 hours a week volunteering and loving every second of it, every minute of it. Looking at Daryl crazy when he's like, don't you want to go home? No, why would I want to go home? You know, I love it. It's what I do.
What are all the things that are in your week that are helpful to your recovery? Like personally for you, what do you find is necessary to keep you on track?
What I find is necessary to keep me on track is my art. I draw. My parents that I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. They were the biggest people that keep me, that helped me stay on track, because they were the ones who, even though I was an adult, they understood where I was coming from. And so they helped, the lack of a better word, they helped raise me to where I got to, you know, and they were always there to support me, you know. And so they were huge, and they stayed a huge influence in my recovery. And the recovery center is a huge influence in my recovery. There's two things that happen when you meet somebody in crisis. One is you get to help them, okay? And that's a great thing for the person that's doing the helping, okay? And there's a reason for that. When you've had the same background that they have, right? Then when they come in there and they say this and that, you know, you remember back what that was like. And then you look at where you're at. And that in itself gives you yourself hope for your recovery. And when it does that, then it lets you spread that hope to them, because you can say, well, I know where you're coming from. I was there a few years ago. This is what I do now. This is what I've been through to get here. And that gives them hope that they can get to where they want to be. And once you get that hope, things look different.
Do you get to watch people as they're changing and growing?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. My gosh, yes. I love that part. I get to watch them go from where they're going to. They'll come in all excited. I got it, you know. And, I mean, I am twice as excited as they are, you know. And, I mean,
I can just picture you, RJ. You're in there. Yep, you guys are jumping up and down.
Yeah, I'm jumping up and down. I got my arms up and down and everything. And I get really excited because, maybe it's something just small as they're looking for a job, you know. And I'll know they have a job interview, and I'll be like, man, I wonder how that's going. You know, and I'll be nervous for them, you know.
So that's what I was going to say. Tell us about the resource wall, and then also other things that the Lake Tahoe Recovery Center does to help people in the community.
Okay, well, one thing we have is we have this huge resource slot wall. It's huge. It's got resources for almost everything you can think of. We have AA, NA, food, addicts is what they call it, Al-Anon, the non-smoking. And then we have another section that is for mental health. That's kind of like you move down the next part of our wall. And that's mental health. That has all our counselors, things like that. Counselors, services, where can you go to get help? What's the closest places to go for it? And a lot of times we can get like what insurance they take, you know, or if they're willing to work with you on a sliding scale, you know, such as like the Chaz Center, they'll work with you on a sliding scale. And people come to you, they'll go, well, I don't have no insurance to go see a doctor. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let me just walk you right down to the Chaz Clinic down here, mm-hmm. because they'll see them.
great resource.
It's an excellent resource. This community has a lot of resources in it.
It does. And I was hoping maybe, RJ, you could let us know what the address and the phone number is for the Latah Recovery Center.
The address for the Latah Recovery Center is 531 South Main Street, Suite B. In Moscow, of course.
And it's where the old Wheatberries used to be.
It's where the old Wheatberries used to be. We're right down there downtown, right next to Wacky Doos. And our phone number is 208-883-1045. You know, and we're open from 10 to 8. If you just want someone to talk to, just call, you know. Let us see, you know, if we can help you. Because one of the greatest things that helps us is to help them, you know. Because, like I already said, it reminds us of where we used to be and keeps us having hope. And then for me personally, being a certified peer support, you know, and recovery coach, that's my favorite part of my job. My paperwork definitely is not my favorite part of my job. But that is my favorite part of my job. And the reason that is because you get to connect with people, you know. And for all the times in my recovery, and especially in my mental health recovery, I can think of the millions of times that I wanted to connect with someone who understood what was going on and how do you get through this.
So the being alone.
Exactly. The being alone. That is one of the hard, for me, that was one of the hardest things to cope with. And I had to learn, you know, without having like a recovery coach or a peer support, but I had a great counselor. And, you know, I had Andrew who was, you know, terrific at giving me support back then and everything. But I locked me and my daughter up in my apartment for 6 months because I didn't trust anybody else.
Yeah. So earlier you had spoken about how you've been in recovery for
my drug abuse and my alcohol has been 29 to 30 mm-hmm. years. My mental health has only been 8.
So, right. And so you talked the first segment about feeling like something just wasn't right, even mm-hmm. though you were in recovery and you weren't using or drinking. But there was this feeling that just wasn't right.
I wasn't right. I wasn't able to do what I could see everybody else to do.
Can you explain like the path from when you started taking some steps to, what did that look like when you started making changes in
that
area?
That was easy. I got in trouble with Truancy because my daughter was in school because, like I said, I wasn't sending her. Mm-hmm. And that's how I met my counselor, was through the juvenile, you know, people who helped me with keeping her in school and stuff. And then they were great. And I told them, they're like, oh, well, we need to fix Michaela. And I said, well, no, duh, but I need to fix me first and I don't know how. And she's like, oh, we can work with that. And I went, huh? And from there, you know, it was like this ball that just started at the top of the hill and it just kept going.
And so how did they help you?
They helped me by, one, introducing to my counselor. And she is a fantastic lady. And so she helped me a lot with, okay, I get this is where you think you are, mm-hmm. but this is what I see. And so I kind of learned from her that we're kind of our own worst critics. And so I started growing and having more confidence, you know. And well, if you have a question, call me, but you can do this. And then I had my parents there the whole time. You know, they lived in South Carolina, but they were still on the phone with me every day. And, you know, okay, if you need help, let me know. And I got the courage to start asking for help. And that's one of the hardest things to do, I think.
I just want to interject real quick. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's kind of the first step in making a change with mental illness
or definitely.
Drugs or alcohol? Is
in any of it, that first step is, can I get some help? Mm-hmm. And that's one reason why I love the recovery center and being there. You don't have to worry about, do you have money? You know, do you belong there? Do you have an appointment? Any of that. It's, I need help, please. And we will be more than happy to help you.
So reaching out to one
exactly.
place. And so I didn't mean to take you off track.
You're
so
fine.
You started to meet with a counselor. Mm-hmm. And then was there any other important steps that led you to where
there
you
was.
Are now?
There was my own learning and growing as I was working with my counselor. There was my own learning and growing. And then I began to realize that I was stronger than I ever thought I was. That was a big key in my mental health recovery. The biggest thing that helped me see was I was not a label. I was a person. And even though I had these issues, I was a person that had these issues. These issues weren't me. They were just a part of me.
Because earlier you spoke about when you were very young, 8 years old or so, being diagnosed with, was it dyslexia?
Dyslexia and ADHD.
And how that affected you as a mm-hmm. child and what you were thinking. So go on about the labeling as far as,
so
you realize that.
That was one of the things that really got me, was I realized that they were just labels. Mm-hmm. They weren't me. And I got a whole lot of that, learning that part of it, from being at the Latar Recovery Center during the months that I volunteered there. Because here I was, I always thought all my life, having these were a bad thing. They were terrible, you know, they were terrible. And here it was, they were the greatest thing that ever happened to me. So for me, the adjustment from these are labels and these are not me, although I had started doing it before I went there to volunteer, I had ended up, that really cinched it for me that, you know, people are not labels, they're people. And one of the greatest things I think about this community is that they're trying to have, the community itself now that I see, mm-hmm. is trying to have an open mind about it. They're not trying to look at people as labels if they say there's something wrong. They're looking at them as people. And for a community, that's a great thing.
So I have a question. What do you think, what kinds of things do you think could help in the community regarding, you know, addiction or mental health, abuse, homelessness? What do you think? Since you work in this area with helping people, what do you think we need?
Well, there's a couple of things I actually think about that. One of which is, I think that if we had something for kids, you know, just for kids, you know, that didn't cost a lot of money, because there's a lot of people that don't have money nowadays, really, you know, and that they could go to, that they could have fun with peers their age, but it was somewhat guarded, so, you know, things weren't going on, like drugs or anything.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But it would give them kind of a sounding board of a peer to go to, you know, like, oh, I had this problem at school today, or I got bullied at school today. And maybe they're, you know, that person they're talking to there, their peer, knows how that is, so they can help them with it. You know, a place where kids can say what they feel like they need to say without having the whole world come crashing down on them. I know for my daughter, who's 12, last year being bullied was a huge thing. I mean, you know, she went through her own type of mental health last year being bullied. And if it wouldn't have been for the fact that I already know a counselor and I knew resources out there in the community that could help her, I don't think it would have came out nearly as well as it did.
So there was a positive. You took your experiences on how to get help, and then you got your daughter help.
Yes.
So I hear a lot, to me, I hear a lot of taking situations that maybe you thought of at first were these labels or these negative things, and I feel like you brought strength from them and turned it around.
Thank you. I tried to. I really did. I tried to turn the negative things into a positive thing, and because I always felt it was so much easier to look at a positive thing than it is to look at a negative thing. And I even do that with my peers. Okay, well, yeah, but what's positive? Let's focus on the positive. And it seems, I feel like it works out really, really well.
What are some of the positive
things? Well, I can only tell you from my experience.
Sure.
My experience, there's a big one. I always, all my life, thought having that label, like I said, was a negative thing. That turned out to be one of the most biggest positive things in my life. Another positive thing. Last year, my daughter, who was being bullied in school, you know, to a great extent, I don't really think the school did the best they could to deal with it, but it still wasn't enough for my daughter. And where a positive out of that was, now that particular school has a person there, a counselor type, just for that, you know. Another positive thing comes out in the community. You know, now I used to walk out, and the only way I can do it is give you an example of a grocery store. I used to be afraid to go into a grocery store because I was afraid everybody was staring at me, you know, because here I am, I don't know anything. I mean, in my words back then, I was just totally stupid and I didn't know anything, and I had this terrible low self-esteem about me. So I knew the minute I walked into a store, that was like a spotlight. Everybody was staring at me. The last thing I wanted to do is be in a store. I had this incredible CBRS worker that my counselor got me in touch with. And all those store experiences to me were always negative. And then I went to the store with her a few times and I got a little better. And then one day my daughter needed some medicine and I didn't have it and I had to get on the bus. I had to get on the bus, me who doesn't do these things. I had to get on the bus, go to the store by myself and get the medicine. If I never would have had that interaction with that CBRS worker, and had she never have taken me to those to the stores. I went to the same store she took me to that store, and taught me that, no, they're really not looking at you. They're really worried about how they're going to spend their money and make it stretch. I probably would not have been able to get the medicine that day. There's a positive. My daughter being bullied last year. This year, she's stronger. This year, she stands up to it. This year, it doesn't affect her negatively. She doesn't have a low self-esteem about her this year. You know, that's a huge positive out of negative.
And all of this came from the fact that you asked for help.
All of it came from the fact that I asked for help.
Well, we're going to take a break real quick. Thank you, RJ. This is Denise with Recovery Radio. You're listening to KRFP in Moscow, Pullman.
There's something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong with our eyes. We're seeing things in a different way. God knows it ain't his. It sure ain't no surprise. Yeah. We're living on the edge. The light bulb's getting dim. There's meltdown in the sky. If you can judge a wise man by the color of his skin, then mister, you're a better man than I. Oh, living on the edge.
You can't let yourself go far.
Living on the edge.
You can't help yourself at all.
Tell me
to Living on the Edge by Aerosmith. And this is Denise Miller with Recovery Radio. You're listening to KRFP in Moscow, Pullman. I have some information to share about some services here in Moscow. And I'm going to go ahead and get to those now. All right. So Al-Anon is a support group for those who have been affected by alcohol addiction of a family member or friend. Al-Anon meets Mondays at 7 p.m. in the Good Samaritan Village Community Room, 640 North Eisenhower Street in Moscow. On Wednesdays at 7 p.m. in the Pullman Presbyterian Church, second floor library, 1630 Stadium Way. And on Friday at 8 p.m. at the Gritman Medical Center, first floor conference room, 700 South Main Street. We also have information on Sequel Alliance Family Services. Their mission is designated to provide intense outpatient support for individuals and families struggling with mental illness, chemical dependency issues, and developmental disabilities. They begin with a comprehensive diagnosis evaluation, followed by a referral to an appropriate services. Their physicians and clinicians are licensed in the state of Idaho and supervise all community-based services. Case managers focus on linking clients to appropriate services and support in the community. So they work with adults, adolescents, children, and families. And they are located here in Moscow, 212 Rodeo Drive, number 410. And their phone number is 208-882-5960. And I also have information, these are classes for victim recovery, and it's through Abuse Recovery Ministry and Services. And they do 15-week classes that are free. They're faith-based. And the number that you call for that locally is 509-484-0600. And their national number is, 503-846-9284. And you can also reach them online at www.armsonline.org. And then the Latal Recovery Center is located here in Moscow, 531 South Main Street, Suite B, and that's where the old Wheat Bears used to be. And their phone number is 208-883-1045. And they offer many different services. They have peer support specialists. They have different classes for coping skills, positive affirmations, building self-esteem, life skills, health and medical referrals, 12-step programs, tobacco cessations, nutrition and exercise, yoga classes, creative art and crafts, dialectical behavior. So they have many classes. They also have a wall that has tons of resources on it. They can help you with anything from helping you with your taxes to getting resumes, helping you learn how to use a computer. There's just many services. If you go in there, RJ works there, and her big smile will probably greet you. So RJ, I had a couple more questions for you. We have just a little bit of time left. What do you think, you've been in recovery for a really long time, and you've worked with a lot of people now since you've been working at the recovery center. You're certified in different areas to work with people with mental illness and drug and alcohol. Mm-hmm. What do you think is helpful for people who have a family member or a friend who are struggling in these areas with alcohol or addiction or mental illness? Just
there's
anything.
A couple of things. One thing that is very helpful is just listen to them. Don't judge them. Don't say, oh, you shouldn't have. Just listen. And when you're done listening, let them know that you're there with them. You know, that they're not going to fight this on their own. You're going to help them with that journey. You know, and, you know, try to get them, you know, you can't just say, well, you need to go see a counselor because that doesn't work very well. You know, talk to them. You know, do you feel this would help you? You know, and just kind of go it that way. Another great way, if you have family or members or you want to learn even how to deal with, you know, mental health and stuff, we have like an introductory to recovery coaching class, which our recovery volunteers take. And it covers a lot of that. And we're doing that again pretty soon here. So if you want to know about that, just, you know, call us up there.
That's up and coming.
And, you know, that's a great class if you just want to know about it. you just want to learn about it.
I believe that's two Mondays in a row for a few hours.
I think there's actually doing it on 2/3 because I do believe it's the 18th and the 25th, which are Thursdays this time.
Sorry.
Is when we're doing it. That's okay. Normally we do it on Mondays. Mm-hmm. So, that's a great way to learn. You know, if you have a family member or something, or if, you know, you're in a church and you want to work with one of your people at church, that's a great place to come to learn.
So it might give you a better understanding on how to just be there.
Exactly.
For that person.
It will give you a really good on how to just be there for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and make sure that you know some of the resources. And if you don't, come see us. Because we know pretty much all of them.
So you could come into the Latah Recovery Center and come talk to someone if you're in that situation.
Exactly.
And get some support.
And get some support for yourself and help them.
So, RJ, thank you so much for coming in today. We really appreciate you taking your time and also all that you do at the Latah Recovery Center to help in our community. It's just amazing, and we're so grateful for you and the Latah Recovery Center.
You are so welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, RJ.
Thank you.
And you're listening to KRFP in Moscow Pullman, and it is 1:54.